Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody to the first of four college football preseason podcasts here at bangthebook.com. I'm your host, Adam Burke. Joining me, as always, bangthebook.com expert handicapper, resident college sports expert, Mr. Kyle Hunter. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
It's going good, man. Enjoying the summer. Excited to talk about football for the first time. I will say this is one of those times where it's a little bit of a bittersweet. I can't decide what I'm looking forward to most, enjoying the rest of the summer or the fact that football is only a couple months away.
Yeah, it's certainly been a good summer so far, with exception of all the rain that's been plaguing the country. And I know a lot of rain coming up this weekend for a lot of areas. But, you know, I guess that is kind of a reminder that, you know, we are getting closer to football season. Cole Ryan and I already did four NFL preseason podcasts, or went over win totals for all 32 teams. We're going to give an overview of the college football season here on this show. We're going to talk about some futures odds for the national championship, go over some coaching changes, you know, some of the big names that have left. You know, I think a good place to start here, Kyle, is to simply talk about how to prepare for the college football season, because as we've talked about a lot on both of our shows, both Handicapping the Hardware, our college basketball podcast, and this show, you know, with every offseason in college comes a lot of roster turnover.
Yeah, this is a really good time to talk about prep for the season. And the good news is you still have plenty of time to prep for the season. That's kind of why we're doing these shows now, so we can talk about ways to start looking at things. You've got a little over 2 months, plenty of time to dive deep into it. This is the time of the year where you start figuring out coaching changes. I know we're going to talk about that today. That's really important. Especially like to look at teams that are going to do a lot of things different as far as pace of play, schematics. Some coaching changes mean more than others to me based on, you know, if it was an assistant that's already been at the program that's going to keep things going the same way versus somebody who's going to change things up totally. It's also a good time of the year to start looking at things like scheduling, you know, just try to figure out what things are going to be different compared to last year, because it is a whole new season. There's a lot of turnover. I know there's plenty of turnover in pro sports as well, but some massive turnover in college. So you got to remember that this is the time of the year to start looking at things like that. You do have time, but it's a good time to be starting.
Yeah, and the one thing about roster turnover in the professional leagues is that, you know, it is a lot different because all these guys are professionals. And when you talk about college football, you've got different star-rated players, you know, a smaller conference team that loses, you know, say it's quarterback that is, you know, the school record holder in passing yards, you know, passing touchdowns, things of that sort. You know, somebody like a Rakeem Cato at Marshall, you know, somebody who has that kind of production. You know, when a player like that leaves, and of course I'm just using Cato as an example because he's a, you know, a pretty obvious one, but, you know, when a player like that leaves, it can have a huge impact on not just the team offensively, but defensively as well, because these teams that, you know, live and die with offense, you know, they're not as equipped to put up good defensive numbers the following year. So all of that has an impact. As you said, coaching changes, teams are going to play with more tempo. You know, that's something we'll talk about when we talk about the American Athletic Conference and some of their coaching changes. But, you know, there's just so much to take in, so much to plan for. You know, what is your starting point?
Well, to me, the starting point is just looking at what kind of turnover you have. We've talked about this before, too. You got to dig deeper. You can't just look at only the head coaching changes. You got to look at it, the assistants. Figure out what kind of schematic changes are going on. And, you know, also there's some new teams as far as even to Division I this year. A lot of times we have teams switching conferences. That's something to look at really early in the time. You don't want to get too far into it before you figure out changes as far as that. This is really just a good time of the year to get an overview. And, you know, as you get closer to the season, you start making lines, doing things like that. We're going to talk about some lines today, but I kind of advise the amateur handicapper to not get too deep into making lines until we figure out a little bit more about these teams, because We are still a little more than 2 months away. There can be a lot of injuries. I think now's a good time to be doing an overview, looking at schematic changes, like I said, conference changes. And like you said, the conference like the AAC we'll talk about quite a bit because that conference is going to look a lot different, very much improved conference. That's the type of things that you should be looking at now instead of going too much into making lines or even figuring out what you're going to do with week one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can get into your power ratings, obviously, and, you know, everyone's out there getting the preseason magazines. A lot of people have had Phil Steele shipped. I know it's supposed to be on newsstands. I guess we'll still call them those next Wednesday, July 1st, at least, you know, in the Midwest. And, you know, it's a good starting point. It's important because, you know, Phil Steele is very connected. He has lots of connections with all the coaches. The coaches read his magazine to see, you know, how their competitors stack up for the year. What's most important to me, I think, about Phil Steele's magazine is the way that he's able to get information on incoming freshmen and transfers, specifically JUCO transfers. You know, a lot of times these junior college players that weren't able to meet grades or whatever else when they were freshmen, they come in and they have a big impact. And, you know, there are coaches that like to go with these players more. Todd Graham at Arizona State is one. Bill Snyder at Kansas State, you know, he loves to go the JUCO route. You know, so you can find some of these players that have a chance to step in, you know, somebody like a Nick Marshall. Nick Marshall was a JUCO transfer, wound up being the starting quarterback at Auburn for a couple of years. You know, you can find these players to where, you know, maybe they're bringing in guys that are experienced at the collegiate level, so there's not as big of a drop-off, you know, when somebody leaves early or graduates and loses their eligibility.
Definitely. I'm not ashamed to say that I have Phil Steele's magazine. I read it a lot. I think that one of the best things about his magazine is he is so closely connected with the coaches that he gets to sit down and spend a bunch of time with them. And that's pretty evident in the magazine. He's able to find out a lot about those new guys. And like you said, those new guys are the guys that are the X factors, really. We already know what, you know, somebody who's already been there for a while is going to do. Obviously, they might get a little bit better. But especially these new guys coming in, that's what we really need to figure out. So, you know, digging deep into that's a good idea. I encourage that. Obviously, there's some other good football previews as well. I think Bill Steele's is the best. But this is a good time of the year to be doing that. And just overview of, you know, the roster changes, what's going on there. I like to circle spots already. I know that it's not a time to be – I'm not placing any bets right now other than win totals for the season. We'll talk about those more later. But I do like to circle some spots when I look through team schedules and say, this is a big letdown spot or, you know, just a brutal scheduling spot for one reason or another based on travel, because it's easy to forget those later on. So I think now is a good time of the year to look at things like that too.
Well, just to give you an idea of what we're going to do with these shows throughout the next few weeks, I know with the All-Star break coming up, I know that Kyle and I, you know, it's one of the few times of the year that we don't have too much to worry about. So, you know, we'll let you know the schedule as we can. We'll be on again next week. We'll talk about the SEC and the Big Ten from a win total standpoint. Following week, we'll talk about the Big 12 and the Pac-12. And then after that, we'll talk about the ACC and some of the bigger programs in the smaller conferences, some of the ones that are of a little bit more interest. But let's look at some of these coaching changes here. We'll start in the SEC, God's Chosen Conference, even though Ohio State was the national champion last year. We'll talk first about the Florida Gators. Will Muschamp out as head coach. That had a little bit of a ripple effect through the program. Player like Dante Fowler leaving early for the draft. You know, a very unfortunate thing with him going to Jacksonville and then getting hurt in a non-contact drill, and he's out for the season. But Muschamp out, defensive coordinator at Auburn now. But the Gators bring in Jim McElwain, a guy who really turned around the Colorado State program. It helped that Garrett Grayson came in. You know, he was a former Texas recruit. They had Capri Bibbs 2 years ago. He had some huge games rushing. And then they had Alabama transfer Dee Hart last year. So, you know, what do you think about McElwain's ability to bring the Gators back to basically being relevant on the national landscape?
I don't dislike the hire. I think it's a little bit of a unknown, though. I think that some of the others, as far as the coaching changes, I'm pretty confident that things are going to go well. This one, I think, is a pretty big unknown. I think it's really tough to figure out how the Gators are going to do this season, especially. Like you said, he did a really good job at Colorado State. I would say that Colorado State is one of the few teams that I would be worried about this year. I think that they're going to lose quite a bit, him leaving. It's just one of those situations where Florida is going to get talent no matter who's there, but they have some really tough competition. So, I mean, they can't just have talent. They have to have good team chemistry. They have to have good schemes. I don't think that Will Muschamp's a bad college football mind. He just didn't work out at Florida. So, to me, this is a big unknown. Florida's going to be a team that I'm going to wait and see what's going on with them. I don't think I'm going to be making any big bets on them either way.
Yeah, I think Florida's a tough one to figure out because when you look at the hire of McElwain, you know, it was obviously a move to generate offense. McElwain is an offensive-minded guy. We saw that with Colorado State. You know, Colorado State wound up being a pretty decent defensive team as well, you know, in a relative sense because the Mountain West plays no defense whatsoever. But he brought in Jeff Collins, Mississippi State's former defensive coordinator. And, you know, that's good because he knows the SEC. He's somebody that's been around. He's somebody that was, you know, pretty highly respected in the early years of Dan Mullen's tenure. Lately, Mississippi State's become more of an offensive-minded program. But, you know, having an experienced defensive coordinator there, I think that really helps. The thing with McElwain, as you said, is that this is a school that brings in talent no matter what. It's just about finding somebody that can maximize that talent and get the most out of it.
It is, and I think time's going to tell whether that's him or not. And, you know, I know that's a little bit of a cop-out answer, but I don't want to come out here with a strong opinion on a team that I don't really know enough about. So, to me, Florida's one of those teams.
No, and it's understandable to take that standpoint, and that's probably a standpoint we'll take more than once on these preview preseason shows because, yeah, there are a lot of unknowns. There are a lot of things that we don't know about. You know, we can crowdsource for information from Steele, Lindy's, you know, all those type of magazines, and also do our own research online. But you know, the things that happen in the spring may not carry over. You know, there's transfers, there's arrests, there's suspensions, all kinds of things like that. So, you know, yeah, it's going to take a little bit of time to see how these teams really do come together. Quick thing I do want to mention in the SEC, Mike Bobo, former Georgia offensive coordinator, took the head coaching job at Colorado State, so he replaces McElwain out there. You think that that's a move that affects Georgia?
I don't know. I think that's an interesting one. I also think that Colorado State's a team I'm a little bit lower on this year. McElwain did such a good job there. Bobo hasn't proven himself as a head coach. He's going to have a lot less talent to work with out there at Colorado State. It's a decent conference now in the Mountain West, so I'm a little bit low on Colorado State heading into the season. Georgia has a lot of talent, so I feel like their new offensive coordinator is really in a good spot because, I mean, it's hard to fail with who they have on their roster. So I think that Bobo did a good job, but I think that that's a situation that will probably work itself out pretty well for Georgia.
I think so as well, and I think it's very, very easy for Georgia to recruit because – the SEC East is clearly the weaker of the two divisions. Georgia's a perennial contender to make that SEC championship game. You know, and Georgia has had a nice long history of guys on both sides of the ball getting taken in the draft. So, you know, that's certainly another one of those schools that really recruits itself. Let's move into the Big Ten here. There were three interesting coaching moves in the Big Ten. We'll start with the one at Nebraska. Bo Pelini relieved of his duties, which was very, very surprising to me. But then the Cornhuskers bring in Mike Riley, who was at Oregon State. Riley's a guy, if I remember correctly, that you were a pretty big fan of out there in the Pac-12.
Well, this is a really interesting one because I think that Riley did a really good job maximizing his talent at the Pac-12. He moves into a very different situation, though, at Nebraska. Expectations are really high. He never had those kind of expectations when you're at Oregon State. Totally different. Nebraska, they're expecting national championships. Right now, they don't have the kind of talent to win national championships. The big question mark for me is, can Mike Riley get that kind of talent? Nebraska, I'm not saying it's a bad place to recruit to, but it's certainly not as easy as some other jobs. But Nebraska fans are still expecting national championships. So I think it remains to be seen whether Riley can recruit the kind of talent that's necessary. I think he's a very good in-game coach. Once you get inside the season, but I think he needs to be even more than that for Nebraska.
My big question with Riley is, you know, can his philosophy mesh with what Nebraska already has? I mean, how long of a rebuilding process is this going to be? Nebraska, largely a running school. You know, they started throwing a little bit toward the end of last year, but when they had Taylor Martinez and, oh boy, help me out. Who's their current quarterback?
Nebraska's current quarterback, the name escapes me right now.
Oh, Tommy Armstrong. Is that right?
Armstrong, yeah.
But, you know, this is a Nebraska team. No, exactly. And that's the thing. I mean, you look at Oregon State, and they've had guys that just chuck it around the yard. I mean, they throw far more than they run the football. They've had essentially no running game at Oregon State the last couple of years. And I wonder how long it's going to take him to build this Nebraska program, or if he's willing to adapt and change. My guess would be no. He's 61 years old now. I imagine he's pretty set in his ways about how he wants to run the team. I'm really concerned about Nebraska, not just this season, but next season as well, because, you know, when you talk about this program and you talk about going from a guy that, you know, that won 9 games several straight seasons, at least 9 games, you know, and then you go to Mike Riley, who, yeah, he maximized his talent in the Pac-12 where he didn't have a whole lot of it. But as you said, now he's going to a school with expectations that recruits a different brand of football than he's used to. That's a big concern for me. I was very surprised with this hire.
You know, I didn't think that Bo Pelini did a great job at Nebraska because he didn't win in the big games. I know he won quite a few games, but I felt like Nebraska was at that level where they were winning 9 games consistently, but not beating anybody really good. I will say that I'm concerned about them as well, like you are. I'm not sure that Mike Riley is a step up. And I think that, like you said, it's a real concern as to whether his system will mesh with what they have here. You also have to remember, I mean, they lost Amir Abdullah, and he was a really good running back. So they don't have that luxury anymore. Tommy Armstrong's not a very good passer. I think there's kind of a reason why we couldn't think of Tommy Armstrong right away. He's not that good of a quarterback, and he doesn't have good wide receivers around him. So, you know, Kenny Bell's gone from last year, and he was certainly their best receiver. So Nebraska has a shortage of talent, at least on the offensive side. So they're going to have to win with defense this year.
Yeah, and defense isn't exactly a hallmark of Mike Riley's either, at least not over the last few years. We'll talk about that team up north, I guess, since it's before the season. I can refer to them as Michigan. But they go from Brady Hoke to Jim Harbaugh. Harbaugh back in the collegiate ranks after having all sorts of success with Stanford. Now he's at his alma mater. You know, this is one of those cases where a guy is truly in his dream job. But the Wolverines have not had a particularly good recruiting class so far this year. They've been operating with a lack of talent at several positions over the last couple of seasons. I'm happy in the sense that it should renew the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry. You know, I mean, I have no problem with Ohio State winning the game every year, but, you know, it's going to even things out a little bit, I think, once Harbaugh is able to establish, you know, what he wants to do. The question for me is, if Harbaugh wants to go with that power running style that he had at Stanford, you know, is that something that can work at Michigan?
I think it probably can. I think it might take a little bit of time, though. Michigan is a team that's clearly on the rise with Harbaugh. I mean, obviously, both of us big Ohio State fans. I think that both of us are going to probably talk about Ohio State winning the national championship last year as much as we possibly can. I know I will, but I'm happy for the fact that Michigan got Jim Harbaugh because I think it's better for the Big Ten if Michigan is better than what they have been. Last year's Michigan team going 5-7, it's just not a good look for the Big Ten. The Big Ten did a really good job in the bowl season, but I really think things are better off if the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry means a lot more than it has the last few years. It definitely will with Jim Harbaugh in there. I think the only question is how long it takes him to be successful here. Let's not kid ourselves. He's done an amazing job everywhere he's been. So Harbaugh was an amazing hire, kind of fell right into Michigan's laps. Obviously, they're going to take him. I think he'll be there for a really long time. I think he'll be very successful. But I do wonder if people might have a little bit too high expectations for this season.
I think they do. I mean, you know, like I said, there's a lot of building that needs to go on at that school. They've, you know, they lost a guy in Funchess who was, you know, one of their top playmakers at wide receiver. They don't really have anybody capable of playing the quarterback position right now. You know, they will start to recruit better. They have not recruited all that well so far. They did get a little bit of a late start in the recruiting process with Harbaugh trying to get away from San Francisco. You know, I do think that that's something that'll be on the rise for them in the near future. And, you know, yeah, it is important for the strength of the Big Ten overall. And especially with a program like Ohio State clearly on the rise, you know, Michigan State, a team we'll talk about here in a second, you know, with what's going on with them. You know, obviously, they've been very good. Connor Cook, a potential Heisman dark horse. So the Big Ten getting stronger, and that's important. One of the teams that has been strong in the Big Ten is Wisconsin. They lose Gary Anderson, who had some problems with the school's admission process. He felt like he wasn't able to recruit the type of players that he needed. So he goes out to Oregon State, switching places with Mike Riley, and now Paul Christ, former Wisconsin offensive coordinator, is back after a mediocre run at Pitt. This is definitely a downgrade for the Badgers, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that Paul Christ's style certainly fits well because he wants to run the football. But, you know, he couldn't win games at Pitt very well. Now he's moving to a lot tougher situation. Wisconsin always has a harder time recruiting than a lot of the other elite teams in the Big Ten. So they have to maximize their talent. Christ hasn't shown he can do that yet. If he can't do that at Wisconsin, Wisconsin's going to go south in a hurry because, like you said, the rest of the Big Ten's getting better pretty fast here. They still have plenty of talent at running back. Obviously, they lost a lot, but Corey Clement's a really good running back. They always have a good offensive line. Wisconsin's going to run the football a lot, especially since Joel Staubbe is just not a very good quarterback. But, you know, can they stop people enough? They had a really good defense last year. They'll probably lose a little bit there. I think this is a clear downgrade, though. I don't think there were too many downgrades as far as coaching changes, but Gary Anderson's a really good coach. Certainly shocked me that he left, and I don't think that Paul Christ is going to have near the upside that Anderson did.
No, I don't think so either. I think maybe this is one of those situations where Christ sort of lives off of what Bielema and Anderson built for him with some of the upperclassmen that are still there. Kind of like a Mark Helfrich-type situation in Oregon where – you know, he's been living off Chip Kelly's team for a while. Now that he doesn't have Marcus Mariota, I'm curious to see what happens there at Oregon. But that's sort of what I see for Wisconsin. I think they'll be pretty good this year, you know, because not many things will change. But I'm worried about Chris's ability as a recruiter. You know, sure, he can recruit guys on the offensive line and running backs, you know, because that was basically what he did when he was the offensive coordinator there. But in terms of sustaining the strong defense that Wisconsin has had, you know, I'm not particularly certain about that. So we'll look at Christ's old team, Pitt. They bring in Pat Narduzzi, which is a home run hire for the Panthers. However, you know, this is something that you and I talked about toward the end of last year. If you're Pat Narduzzi and you can handpick a lot of jobs, why do you go to Pitt?
It's a good question. I don't know the answer to that one. And I wonder how long he's going to be at Pitt. You wonder if he gets successful here, if he has bigger and better things on his way. I think the answer is probably yes. Having said that, though, Pitt fans should be excited to have him right now. Their defense is obviously going to get better in a hurry. Their offense, I don't know how they'll be right away, but I think Narduzzi's going to do a really good job recruiting in general. I think that Pitt's a team on the rise pretty quickly in a conference that's not very good.
Yeah, I think the big thing with Narduzzi is that he's going to recruit defense. And in the ACC, there are not a whole lot of good defensive teams. So that right there is going to put Pitt in a position to have success. They do like to run the football. James Conner is a very good running back. So at least Narduzzi has that. You know, we're going to see a lot of hallmarks of Mark D'Antonio teams with the Pitt offense. They're going to run a lot of play action, short throws. They're not going to stretch the field very much. You know, Pitt, probably a team that you look to play unders with this year because I think Narduzzi is going to ease his way into controlling both sides of the ball. We know that defensively they're going to be max effort. He makes it a point to recruit defensive backs. Michigan State's had some very good secondaries over the last few years. That's going to help in the ACC. I think it's a very good hire for the school. Maybe it is a good place for Narduzzi to end up because there aren't a whole lot of expectations at Pitt. You know, they're certainly not going to play with the Clemsons and Florida States of the world over the next couple of years. So, you know, maybe there's that. And like you say, I mean, it's kind of, to use a poker term, it's almost sort of a free roll for Narduzzi, where if he has great success, he can use it as a springboard to go somewhere else. If he doesn't have success, you say, well, you know, it's Pitt. It was hard to recruit there. It's a program that's been mired in mediocrity for a while. You know, so he certainly has the ability to get this program in the right direction in a hurry.
Yeah, and I think he will help this program quite a bit. Like I said, a big benefit of going to Pitt is the conference is so much weaker than a lot of these other top conferences. So a little bit of a turnaround at Pitt shows up quite a bit more in the win column than it would in another conference.
Well, I'm not going to talk about the Kansas hire. Kansas hired David Beatty from Texas A&M. He was the wide receivers coach. Charlie Weiss now getting paid to not coach at a school again, which, man, if that's good, if you can get that kind of work, it's great. But we'll move out west and look at Oregon State. Already talked about how they hired Gary Anderson, Mike Riley now at Nebraska. And, you know, for Anderson, I guess he kind of wanted to jump on the first job that came available, and Oregon State went after him right away. But Corvallis, not a very easy place to recruit, you know, and this is another situation where this is a team that's not really built to do what Gary Anderson's going to want it to do.
Yeah, I like Gary Anderson. I don't really like this situation for him. It's obviously tough to recruit there, and then you have Oregon right up there with the big money and the, you know, Nike facilities, everything like that. So it's a really tough sell to be at Oregon State. I think Gary Anderson could have gotten a better job at some point, but like you said, he probably kind of just jumped on that one. This is a spot where it's tough to figure out what Oregon State's going to do right away, too. They probably don't fit into his style yet. He can probably make them into a good team, although he's not going to get that elite talent. So I feel like Oregon State's one of those schools where you might have 1 or 2 years where you could be really good, kind of like Mike Riley did with them, but it's hard to consistently be really good at a school like this because you just don't have enough talent to be good every single year.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the Pac-12 in a couple of weeks, but looking at Oregon State's win total right now at 4, you know, that kind of tells you about the current level of talent in the program. I mean, 2 years ago they lost Brandon Cooks to the NFL, Sean Mannion gone last year. He was a huge part of the offense. So, you know, a lot of building needs to be done at Oregon State. And, you know, maybe Anderson kind of romanticizes about that idea because of what he did to build up Utah State very quickly. You know, maybe that's just something that he likes to do, something that he wants to do. And, of course, maybe it's a bit of a Narduzzi situation where obviously the Pac-12 is a more prolific conference. But for Anderson, if he can get any kind of results out of Corvallis, you know, he'll be able to handpick his next job.
Yeah, that's true. He has a lot tougher competition, obviously, so that makes it not quite as good of a situation. But if Anderson does anything at all here, it's going to be very impressive, and he's going to be able to go somewhere else where he is able to recruit the kind of talent he needs to get to really high levels.
Well, we'll move to the American Athletic Conference because, as Kyle said, this is a conference that's going to be very, very exciting. There are three incredible hires here. Tremendous offensive minds. We'll start with Houston since it's the one that we can probably speak the best about, where they hired Tom Herman, Ohio State offensive coordinator, former Iowa State offensive coordinator. It was really surprising to see Tony Levine get his walking papers here. Houston's opening a new stadium, or Houston opened a new stadium last year. They want to get some expectations. They want to get some exciting recruits in there. I mean, Texas is the holy grail of high school football recruiting. So they bring in a guy like Herman, and obviously we've seen what the Ohio State offense has been able to do over the last few years.
This is a home run hire. I mean, amazing hire. Like you said, Levine didn't do a bad job there, so it was a little bit of a surprise to see him gone. But if you're going to get a guy like Tom Herman, you're making a huge upgrade. He's a tremendous coach. He's an amazing recruiter. There's no doubt that Houston's going to be getting far better talent than they've gotten in the past. He's already doing a really good job recruiting there. They're getting some of the highest-rated recruits they've ever gotten, at least recently. So Tom Herman's going to do a really good job here. He's a young guy with a lot of motivation. He's going to get this team pepped up. This is one of those spots where I think that Houston also is in a good situation because obviously there's a ton of talent in Texas. So same could be said about SMU here that we're going to talk about, I'm sure. But there's a lot of talent to work with here in Houston area. Obviously, they have a lot of competition, but there's plenty of talent to go around. Houston's going to get a lot better players than they have in the past. I think this team gets better fast.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think this team gets better very quickly because, as we just said, you know, you've got a lot of players in the state of Texas that are really good, but they're not SEC caliber good. You know, maybe they're not Big 12 caliber good, but they're going to shine in this conference. And with a guy like Herman, who's considered one of the smartest coaches in the country, he's only 39 years old, and he's actually got plenty of Texas ties. He's been with Texas, Sam Houston State, Texas State, Rice. So he has some recruiting pipelines already with some of the more tenured high school coaches in the state. That's going to help him out as well. And that may be something that he has that a guy like Chad Morris doesn't have. You know, Philip Montgomery at Tulsa, he's going to have some of those recruiting pipelines from being the offensive coordinator at Baylor. But, you know, maybe Herman's going to have some more success recruiting on the defensive side of the ball than these other teams. And, of course, you know, I mean, if Houston's going to go out and hang 40 or 45 points a game, maybe they don't need to play a ton of defense. But this is a team that got a lot better defensively under Tony Levine. So, you know, some of those players are still in place.
They are. I think that's why his situation is quite a bit better than SMU, Chad Morris. Morris has some pretty poor talent. Houston doesn't have the same thing with Tom Herman. Herman is ready to go right away. They should be very good. SMU is going to be a lot better, but it's going to take time at SMU because of the type of team Chad Morris has to work with right now.
Yeah, let's talk about SMU here. I mean, they were one of the worst teams in the country in several different statistical categories. I would say close to all of them. But June Jones resigned early in the year after they started 0-2. SMU was in a major state of flux from that point forward. You know, Chad Morris did a great job of recruiting in the Clemson area. You know, he was a high school coach in Texas, so of course he does have some of those recruiting pipelines. But the difference here is that I think SMU is a much, much tougher sell for recruits than a school like Houston is.
I think so, too. And I think SMU, a massive change as far as pace of play. Chad Morris obviously wants to play really fast. I've read some notes on their practices so far on how they've just been so much slower than he wants to be. I think that's going to be the case for quite a while. This is a team that doesn't have very much talent. They certainly haven't been used to playing with quick pace. I will say one thing about SMU is Matt Davis, the quarterback. I watched them play a couple times last year. SMU not good. Matt Davis has some ability, though. This is a guy who was at Texas A&M, transferred to a junior college, and then went to SMU. Davis has some ability. He could do some pretty good things with Chad Morris's offense. He's learning another new offense, though, so it might take a little bit of time. SMU, though, around him doesn't have much talent at all. Like I said, I think it's going to take time for them to get into this really fast-paced offense, even though Chad Morris has been able to do it a lot in the past with Clemson as far as getting him to the line and playing about as fast as anybody in the country. It's going to be a little bit harder to do that at a place like SMU. I think in time, that's going to be a great hire, but it's going to take a lot more time to show here.
Well, I think, you know, and this is a very premature look, but I think you look at SMU as a team that you want to bet overs with this year. Because defensively they were just terrible last year. And it wasn't solely because they were bad offensively. It was because they didn't have a whole lot of playmakers on defense either. You know, and I think if you're Chad Morris, you're going to go with your bread and butter when you start as a head coach at a new school. That's going to be offense. So as you said, he's going to push the pace. He's going to push the tempo. You know, if things aren't being played at the tempo he wants, that's when mistakes start to get made. It's going to be a lot of pressure on this team's defense. Offensively, they'll get better, and they will get players in there that can play. And he'll find guys on the practice squad, or not on the practice squad, but underclassmen, you know, and probably some JUCO guys that can play. This is an SMU team where I think we see some very, very big totals with them. And perhaps, you know, maybe you can take advantage early in the season to where they were so bad offensively last year that maybe some of those numbers open up a little bit low until the odds makers can catch up.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that it'll be interesting to see what happens. I would think the odds makers have set the numbers a decent amount higher than they did last year, but that defense was so bad, they're still going to give up a ton of points. I'm not sure if they finished that way, but I know for a very long time last year, SMU had the very worst defense as far as points given up last year. This is a really bad defense. They're going to score more points this year. If for no other reason other than just playing that much faster, they're going to get a lot more chances. So is the other team, though. So definitely could be some high-scoring games there.
Well, talk about Tulsa here, and Tulsa's had a pretty tumultuous last couple of years. You know, they had some success under Todd Graham. He left. Bill Blankenship took over with Todd Graham's recruits and did a pretty good job. But then over the last 2 years, just 5-19. Tulsa had problems in the athletic department. They had a betting scandal. The athletic director was part of a big sports betting operation in Tulsa. It's just been a gigantic mess for the Golden Hurricane. But now some reason for optimism. Philip Montgomery comes in, an Art Briles assistant for 16 years, past 7 years as Baylor's offensive coordinator. Obviously, everybody knows what Baylor has done offensively over the last few years with Robert Griffin III, Bryce Petty. You know, I'm sure they'll continue everything this year. But for Montgomery, this is a very, very difficult spot to go into. Tulsa's a team that's not very good defensively. Offensively, they had some playmakers, but they didn't really work out for them. And he is another guy that's going to want to run up to the line of scrimmage and run as many plays as possible per game. Tulsa's going to go through some growing pains, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. I don't think he has a very good quarterback to run that system either. Evans has not shown much of anything for Tulsa. He turns the ball over a lot. I wouldn't trust him to make good decisions with the football, and that's something that Baylor has been able to have. Some really good quarterbacks to take care of the football for a long time. Tulsa, I think this is certainly a good hire for them, but I think the jury's out a little bit more on how much success they can have in the long run. Tulsa not quite the same as far as having, you know, Houston or SMU talent base around them at the high school level. So Tulsa has a little bit of tougher job, and with the AAC getting so much better around them, I think the jury's out on how Philip Montgomery will do. I think that it's a difficult job for him. He doesn't step into near as good a situation as some of the other guys.
Well, I think there are two very fascinating hires that we need to talk about in the smaller conferences. First, we'll go with UNLV. UNLV, one of the non-Power 5 conferences to get a win total from CG Technology. That win total sitting at 2.5. But they go from Bobby Hauk to Tony Sanchez. Tony Sanchez was the head football coach at Bishop Gorman High School, a tremendous athletic institution in the Las Vegas area. And, you know, it's interesting. They were 85-5 with Sanchez there, won 6 state titles. But the leap from high school to college football is enormous. However, I have to applaud UNLV for going out of the box here because, you know, I mean, they haven't been very good in football for a while. Their basketball team is up and down, although, you know, Dave Rice seems to be running that program into the ground. So credit to them for thinking outside the box here.
Yeah, I think this was a great hire. I liked it a lot. I think there's a ton of upside potential here. Like you said, it's a big adjustment, no doubt about that. UNLV doesn't have very much talent right now. But I don't think many people would disagree that UNLV has a lot of potential as far as being a good position in the long run. I think that Tony Sanchez could end up getting this to be a team that has a lot more talent than we've ever seen before. I think he's going to do a really good job recruiting. I think UNLV is a pretty easy place to recruit to, and I'm surprised that they've been bad for so long. I don't think it's going to happen in the first couple years, but I think that Tony Sanchez could have a lot of success here.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting move for him. You know, it was kind of a no-brainer. You know, I mean, you get the chance to coach Division I FBS college football, you're going to jump at it. But, you know, he'll be able to feed the pipeline with local kids that come out of his high school. You know, as you said, Las Vegas, a place that you would think would recruit itself. You know, really the only stumbling block for going to UNLV is getting a recruit's parents to buy in. But, you know, in the Mountain West, expectations so low for them. You know, it's really a win-win situation for Sanchez because he probably gets to live out a dream of coaching college football, coaching at UNLV. And if he fails, he's just one of several that have failed at UNLV. You know, so there's not really a whole lot of downside for him there.
You're right. If he fails, I don't think it's going to be where anyone else would look at him and say he can't be successful anywhere. They'll just say nobody's been good at UNLV. If you think about it, Bobby Hauk came into UNLV having done an amazing job at Montana. Expectations were pretty high for him to turn the program around, and they won 2 games in 4 out of his 5 seasons. So, certainly a lot of things to turn around at UNLV. I think Sanchez has a good chance of doing it, though.
Well, and speaking of big jumps, Wisconsin Whitewater's Lance Leipold goes from Division III up to Division I FBS at Buffalo. Buffalo, a team that's gotten some pretty decent talent up there. I mean, obviously Khalil Mack is the one that everybody thinks of, but Brandon Oliver was a very good tailback. They had a guy like Alex Noitz at wide receiver. They've had some guys at Buffalo that can play, but Jeff Quinn fired during the season. They had an interim head coach for a while. But Leipold at Wisconsin Whitewater, 106 wins, 6 losses in 8 seasons, 5 national championships. They seem to meet Mount Union, a small school in Ohio, basically every year in the Division III championship game. A huge jump for Leipold here, and you can't really say that he has college experience because while he does at the Division III level, there are no scholarships. So recruiting is significantly different when you take a step up in class like this.
I think this is a really big unknown. He did a tremendous job at Wisconsin Whitewater. Buffalo is a tough spot, though. They have very, very little talent on defense. They're going to give up a ton of points this year. It's going to take time to see whether he's any good in this position. I don't think Buffalo is going to be very good this year, so I don't think he should be judged based on what happens this year as far as the bowls. The MAC had a decent conference this year, too. So as far as depth, maybe no really good team at the top, but they have plenty of depth there. Buffalo is not going to have a very good year. This is one of those spots, again, where I'm going to say I'm going to kind of wait and see what happens with Buffalo because, like you said, D3, totally different, really big jump. Even though it's only the MAC, that's a very big difference from D3. So this is a big unknown for me. We'll wait and see.
I know both of us Midwesterners, we follow the MAC a little bit closer just because, we get more coverage on it and, we've had friends and all that sort of thing that have gone to some of these institutions. But in terms of Buffalo, in terms of it being a desirable location in the MAC, where would you put it for recruiting purposes? Do you think that it's really, toward the top half of the conference, or is it a place that is pretty tough to get kids to go to?
Well, I don't think anywhere in the MAC really stands out as this massive, great place to go. I think Buffalo is probably somewhere in the middle. I wouldn't say Buffalo is a great place to recruit to, but I don't know that any of the places in the MAC really stand out as, that's definitely where people would want to go play. I think you get a lot of these really tough, hard workers in the MAC, kids that play really hard. So I think that Buffalo kind of fits in with a lot of the rest of the conference. MAC players tend to not be the most talented ever, but they get a lot out of what they've got. So I think it's up to Buffalo and the coaching staff here now to really maximize their talent and do a really good job schematically. And I think that's the challenge for them.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering about this. Admittedly, it hasn't crossed my mind until now, so I'm just sort of wondering, if this may be a thing. With Wisconsin Whitewater, I wonder if maybe there's some Canadian recruiting pipelines there, being a D3 school. Even D3 college football in the U.S. is probably, a little bit more significant than playing in Canada. I wonder if maybe that's something that Leipold would be able to exploit, being so close to Ontario, to where maybe he can get some of these Canadian athletes to come over and play. It's just a hypothetical. I don't know for sure. Maybe it's something I'll try to look into a little bit more, but maybe that could be a thing. I don't know.
It's possible. I'll admit that I don't know if that would be the case. I know that, they are very close there. So if he has some kind of pipeline as far as that, it would certainly help them quite a bit because, like I said, MAC, not known for getting high-end talent. So if they can get some pretty good talent from Canada, that would certainly help them a lot. Again, that's one of those things that's going to be judged over a period of years instead of right away.
Well, one more hire to talk about here, and we talked at the top of this segment about teams that are going to play at a different pace. Troy will be one of those teams. Larry Blakeney, longtime head coach, out after, I believe, 26 seasons. Actually, that's like 24 seasons as the head coach of the Trojans. And they go to former offensive coordinator Neil Brown, who did some very good things with the Kentucky Wildcats offense. They went from 119th in scoring to 66th in scoring over his 2 seasons. Second youngest coach in FBS, but Brown has already made it a point to say, we are going to play very fast here at Troy. And I think that's going to be a very interesting thing for this school because you know, they get a lot of unpolished, raw athleticism at a school like this in the Sun Belt. And it seems like Brown might be a pretty good hire for this school.
Yeah, I think Brown could definitely be a good hire for this school. It's also important to point out that Troy's defense is really, really bad. So if you like overs, if you like some really high-scoring games, Troy should be a team to keep an eye on because I think the odds makers will know that Troy's going to play a lot faster and they'll set the numbers higher, but it's going to be hard to adjust them higher enough. And also, as we talk about a lot on the College Basketball Podcast, this is one of those under-the-radar conferences where lines don't move nearly as quickly as they would somewhere else. So totals bettors should keep a very close eye on this team.
Yeah, the only time you get a big line move in the Sun Belt is basically when right angle fires on a play, and then everybody knows it. You know, those are the Sun Belt, not a very public conference, as you know. And, of course, we do, as Kyle said, like to go under the radar with our college basketball show, you know, because it seems to be easier to exploit those lines. There's a little bit less efficiency, you know, in some of those smaller conferences. A little bit different with college football because there's only 128, 129 FBS teams compared to 351 in college basketball, but you will hear us talk about the Sun Belt, the Mountain West, you know, some of these smaller conferences throughout the year, MAC. You know, we do like to harp on those because you know, we'll talk about the important matchups in the games of the year, which we'll take a look at now. But you know, in terms of finding value, you know, a lot of times we do like to go with those smaller conferences. So as I said, games of the year lines, we've come up with some of our own here. Those will be released this afternoon, Friday afternoon, at the Golden Nugget. I believe they have 165 games coming out, so there's going to be plenty there. It'll be interesting to see how those move. I know several people that are out there trying to take advantage of the line value, so I'm curious to see what kind of numbers they get. LSU is a team that you have on here a few times. You've got LSU -3.5 at Mississippi State, and then LSU +7.5 at Alabama, and also +3 at Ole Miss. And then it comes across this week, Anthony Jennings, the starting quarterback, arrested for, I believe it was breaking and entering or simple burglary, something like that, this past week. So be interesting to see what happens with those lines. He won't get kicked off the program necessarily. Maybe some discipline for some games early in the year. But, you know, in looking at these lines, I think what I see is that you're looking at an LSU team that's going to be inconsistent this year.
Yeah, and I have LSU rated higher than I think most other people will. I think that LSU is a team that could have a pretty good comeback from last year. I don't really like Les Miles very much, but he's certainly a good coach. Not a good in-game coach, but he gets a lot of talent. He gets a lot out of his teams. I suspect that my lines on LSU are higher on them than what the lines will be when they come out later today. So these are my lines and not what I think is going to be released. That's an important distinction to make. I think LSU has so much talent. I think they underachieved quite a bit last year. They were a really young team last year. I really think that they could surprise people this year. Obviously, they got to stay out of trouble or that's not going to be as easy to do. But quarterback's not particularly an area of strength for LSU. The team around the quarterback, though, is pretty good.
Well, and to look at LSU a little bit more here, I want to cover these two lines that you sent over to me today. You have Auburn in Death Valley at LSU as a pick'em, and then you have Alabama at Auburn as a pick'em. So I just want to talk a little bit about your thought process, specifically with the Auburn Tigers here, to where you think that going to Death Valley, they're a pick'em. At home in the Iron Bowl, they're a pick'em. Just curious where your mindset is on them.
Well, first of all, I really like Auburn a lot. I've already played the season win total on Auburn so far. It's the only play I've made. I'll be playing more soon. But I think Auburn has a really, really high upside this year. I'm high on Alabama, although also, obviously, as you can tell, if I have them as a pick'em at home against Alabama, I do think that that is higher than what most people will. Most people will probably have Alabama favored in that game. I like LSU some, like I just said, but I don't like them near as much as I like Auburn, which is evident in my line, like you just said. Auburn's really in a unique spot because Jeremy Johnson's going to be a very good quarterback for them. I'm going to be very surprised if he's not. In some ways, he could be an upgrade over Nick Marshall. I know Nick Marshall was a good quarterback there, no doubt. But Johnson's a really good passer. He has a lot of talent around him, some very good wide receivers. And you bring in some really good coaching here. Gus Malzahn's terrific. Muschamp, he's got a really good situation for Auburn. I think Auburn is in a spot where they could be one of those sleepers. It's kind of hard for Auburn to be seen as a sleeper, but their win total suggests that people aren't near as high on them as I am.
Looking at Auburn right now, they're 10-1 to win the national championship at Bet Online. Do you think that there's value in that number or no?
I think you should probably be able to get better than that at some places. I'm not sure what they are at other books right now. I think I'd wait on that because I'll be surprised if you can't get better than 10-1. But, you know, if you can get 12, 13, 14-1, which I think you probably will be able to at some point, I think that Auburn is a team that could win the national championship or at least be in those final four teams. So I think Auburn has some good value. It's a team that I'm admittedly very high on. Like I said, I don't expect the lines to actually come out that because I don't think everybody else is going to be as high on Auburn as I am. But it's one of those teams where I've just looked at it ahead of time and thought, I'm going to be very high on Auburn going into the season because I think everybody else will be playing catch up later.
Yeah, and Alabama is an interesting team. You know, they need a new quarterback again this year. Amari Cooper goes to the NFL. TJ Yeldon goes to the NFL. You know, so they have certainly had some losses. Of course, they lose guys on defense every year. You know, they just bring in a bunch of five stars or bring in a bunch of five-star underclassmen, and, you know, they seem to be okay. But, you know, I wonder if maybe one of these years that formula is going to stop working. Let's look at some of your numbers here for the Big Ten. This one, very interesting to me. Oregon +5 at Michigan State. We have to talk about that one because that one really intrigues me.
Yeah, well, I think that tells you something right away. We're not doing the Pac-12 preview show right here, but it doesn't take too long for people to know that I'm not very high on Oregon. Michigan State's a team that I think should be very good this year. Connor Cook's a tremendous quarterback. He has a really good offensive line in front of them. I think Oregon's in for a little bit of a down season. I know they still have a lot of talent. I'm not as high on Mark Helfrich as most people are. And I really think that this could be the season it starts to show up. You got to remember, he's had a ton of talent to work with there at Oregon from Kelly's system. And now he's a little bit more on his own. And I think it's going to start to show up. Michigan State's a good team. I don't like the fact that they lost Pat Narduzzi, obviously. But Mark Antonio is a tremendous coach. Probably still a little bit underrated, although you know, people are starting to realize how good he is at this point. I don't expect the line to be exactly that, but I do think that Michigan State is in a good spot for that game.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see what they do with the games of the year as it pertains to Oregon, because, yeah, there's still all kinds of talent there, but, you know, until somebody proves themselves at quarterback, you know, I don't know who's going to get those guys the ball. And, you know, Oregon's just going to run sideline to sideline like they always do. But it was the fact that Mariota was a very good, very intelligent passer. I mean, he did not turn the ball over much. You know, and that was something that really helped Oregon because for a while their defense was a little bit suspect. It's gotten better now. But, you know, Oregon, a lot of intrigue with them entering the season. You've got Michigan State as a touchdown dog going to Ohio Stadium, take on the Buckeyes. You also have Ohio State as a 10-point favorite at Michigan. So, you know, it's not particularly surprising that you're high on the Buckeyes because everybody else is. They're +325 at BetOnline to win the national championship. They were a year ahead of schedule when they won last year. Everybody's talking about them as the most talented, most complete team in the country. Is that Michigan State game a concern for you where they're only a touchdown favorite?
Yeah, I mean, Ohio State is the most talented team in the country. They were certainly a year ahead of schedule. If you just look at talent and the schedule ahead of them, it would be a surprise if Ohio State doesn't end up in those final four teams in the playoffs. I will say, though, you see that situation that it can be really hard sometimes for teams who just won the national championship to not have a little bit of let up the next season. We'll see what happens with Ohio State. I think that's the biggest unknown for Ohio State is can they keep that same level of motivation. Michigan State's a team that's very good, so I'd be worried about playing them anywhere. Ohio State -10 at Michigan. probably pretty close to what's going to come out. I think that, you know, some people would be really tempted to take Michigan in the points right away because of Harbaugh, but obviously Ohio State in a lot better spot roster-wise than Michigan is right now. Stranger things have happened than Michigan winning that game, but Ohio State will be a pretty significant favorite in that game. Michigan State's a lot more complete team right now than Michigan is, and that's why actually I have Michigan State as a -5.5 favorite at Michigan. So it tells you quite a bit about how much higher I am on Michigan State versus Michigan.
I want to talk about Southern Cal here. Southern Cal, not to spoil it for anybody that hasn't gotten Steele's magazine yet, but Steele has the Trojans in the Final Four. So you've got some lines with them here. You've got USC -4 hosting Stanford. You've got USC -4 hosting UCLA. But then you have USC +4 at Oregon, who you just said you think is going to have a little bit of a down year. So I'm kind of interested in your thought process regarding the Trojans.
Well, Oregon's a really tough place to play first. So I'm going to rate them quite a bit higher at home than I do on the road. USC is a tough team to figure out for me. USC has a ton of talent. I watched USC quite a bit last year. I even told you before the show there were some teams that I think have a ton of talent but have a little bit of questionable coaching that I'm not sure if they're going to be able to match expectations. USC is one of those. Sarkisian made some really confusing decisions late in games last year, really hurt USC a lot. I'm wary to be too high on USC because of that. I think the USC's talent base is certainly very good. Still don't have the depth that some of the other teams have, though, and that usually shows up later in the year. USC is one of those teams that I think has a really high upside, but they're going to struggle to be as consistent as some of the other best teams.
Yeah, Sarkisian is very interesting to me because at Washington, you know, he really maximized his talent extremely well. They were a very good team at home. However, there were some situations where they got fortunate with scheduling to where they had teams coming to play a letdown game or a sandwich game up there in the Northwest, and they really took advantage of a lot of those. And as you said, now at Southern Cal, you have expectations. I mean, they're athletically one of the best teams in the country year after year. It's a school that recruits itself. You know, it's a school that's expected to perform specifically in these big games. And, you know, like you say about Sarkisian, it seems like the moment kind of got too big for him at times last year. And, you know, that's something that a coach has to overcome because I like to think that teams take on the personality of their head coach. And if Sarkisian's continuing to, you know, kind of trip over himself in these big games, you know, I'm kind of afraid that it has a trickle-down effect to the rest of the team. And, you know, the one silver lining for USC is that Cody Kessler is a Heisman Trophy candidate, even with a guy like Nelson Agholor moving on to the NFL.
Yeah, Kessler's great. USC certainly has the talent to do it. Like I said, I'm just concerned about them based on what I saw at the end of games last year. And, you know, that little bit less depth certainly matters at the end of the game. You might be a little bit more worn out than the other team. That can lead to several things. It can lead to fatigue. It can also lead to mental fatigue where you make some bad decisions. So USC, a team that can beat anybody, but I'm not sure that they're going to be in those Final Four teams.
Well, let's talk about TCU here real quick. We're going to be wrapping up the show in a few minutes. You know, we'll get to some more futures numbers as we talk about the teams in the conferences, since we didn't really get to it today because we spent a lot of time on those coaching changes. But TCU, you've got them as a 6-point home favorite against Baylor. You also have them favored at Oklahoma by 4.5. I noticed that that's north of the key number. And TCU, a team that's probably going to come out as a preseason number 2. Trevon Boykin back, Heisman Trophy favorite, depending on where you look. You know, Gary Patterson's team, major chip on their shoulder after not getting selected for the Final Four last year. TCU has everything to gain and also everything to lose this season.
Yeah, I'm pretty high on TCU. I really like Gary Patterson a lot, obviously. There's not very many spots where he isn't it's not a big coaching advantage for TCU versus the other team. Obviously, a guy like Bill Snyder, one of the rare spots where he might not be, but you know, TCU is a team that has so much talent. Like you said, they come in with a chip on their shoulder. Trevon Boykin was so good last year. I really think TCU is going to have another very good season. I think there are a lot more question marks at Baylor than there are at TCU. TCU is obviously going to want some revenge from last year as well. So Minus six might be a little higher than some other people have that number, but that's one that I think that TCU is in a pretty good situation for. The Oklahoma game's a little bit tougher for me to line because I don't know really what to make of Oklahoma right now. I feel like they're one of those teams that could go either way. And Bob Stoops, not seen as the level coach that he was a few years ago, certainly not on the level of Gary Patterson. And Oklahoma doesn't have as much talent as TCU does right now. So TCU has the best talent and the best balanced team in the Big 12. You know, they just got to avoid that slip up.
Well, how dare you go against Big Game Bob here on our first show of the season? But, you know, one of the things that you talk about with TCU last year was the hiring of Doug Meacham, who worked very closely with Trevon Boykin, you know, seen as sort of a quarterback whisperer, if you will. You know, and Boykin made huge strides last year, and then him and Meacham worked together again all off season this year. That makes TCU a really scary team. I mean, you know, now that they're in the Big 12, they've been able to recruit right alongside the big boys. What Patterson was able to do when he was in the Mountain West was impressive. Take it up a notch, now he's getting Big 12 caliber talent. TCU is a very, very dangerous team. And I think if you look around the Big 12, I'm not particularly high on the conference as a whole. Like you say, Oregon, a little bit of a question there. Or not Oregon, Oklahoma, a little bit of a question there. Oklahoma State, you know, they really haven't been able to figure it out the last few years. And I do think that Baylor could have a little bit of a drop-off. You know, system-wise, Seth Russell will be just fine. But I think the loss of Philip Montgomery is going to affect this offense a little bit more than people expect.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think, you know, if you talk about TCU, I'm looking at five dimes right now, plus 925 TCU to win the NCAA championship. I think that's a good value. I think TCU is the second best team in the country. And like we said, coming in with a major chip on their shoulder, that's the difference between TCU and Ohio State right now. I think Ohio State unquestionably has a better roster. TCU comes in with that chip on their shoulder, kind of that Ohio State had when they made the Final Four last year and everybody said they don't deserve to be there. So TCU, a really dangerous team. I think plus 925 is a pretty good value.
Yeah, it is. Plus 950 at BetOnline. So, you know, that really drives home the importance of making sure that you shop around. You know, that's something you definitely want to do. And, yeah, I mean, you don't have to be making your picks for the national championship just yet, but, you know, it is something that you want to consider. And, of course, with the Final Four now, you get some more hedging possibilities. So that's also something you can consider. Kyle, I think we covered a lot of great things on today's show. I know I'm excited to see what the Golden Nugget comes out with for the lines this afternoon. As I said, next week we'll be talking about the SEC and the Big Ten. We'll be able to go a little bit more in-depth on those teams. Also talk about there's a conference national champion prop bet. And we'll also talk about the futures for those teams along with their win totals. So you know, it's great to be talking college football again. You did a phenomenal job putting these lines together. I was very impressed with the numbers you have. Any final thoughts from you?
Hey, I'm glad to be talking college football again. I know there's probably going to be a little bit of rust here and there, us not being able to think of Tommy Armstrong being the first case of that. But, you know, I think we did cover a lot of good things today. And I do think that today's show proved that, you know, even though it's late June, Adam Burke and Kyle Hunter can still talk about college football for a long time and be very interested for the whole show. So hopefully everybody else was as interested as we were while we were talking about it.
Absolutely. And you can hit either one of us up on Twitter. I'm at Skating Tripods. Kyle is at Kyle Hunter Picks. If you want to ask us about how to prepare for the season, if you want us to talk specifically about anything regarding any of the teams that we'll have on the next few weeks of shows, please don't hesitate to hit us up. I've got to give a shameless plug for my MLB podcast, The Bettors Box. Record that every Monday and Thursday. So I don't know what day we'll be on next week with the second episode of the show, but we'll be sure to let you know. So thank you very much for tuning in, everybody. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you sometime next week.